Good evening and welcome to another edition of Health Matters. And tonight, if you're one of the many people who suffer through migraine headaches, or if you have someone in your family who does, you'll want to stay with us for the next hour. We'll be talking about the causes and treatments for migraine headaches. And joining me tonight is Dr. Randall Brewer from River City's Interventional Pain Specialist. That's part of the Willis-Knighton Health System. Your calls are also welcomed this evening at 800-552-8502. First of all, Dr. Brewer, welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
You know, everyone suffers from some sort of headache. What defines a migraine and what makes them such a pain in the head?
Yeah, migraines are really very common, and most people who have headaches on a regular basis probably have migraine of some form. Typically, migraines will have a component which is throbbing. It may be on one side of the head or another. And very commonly, people will have another family member who has migraine headaches as well.
So it's genetic or can be genetic?
It can be genetic. It's very strongly influenced by family history.
Do we know of other causes? What other reasons there might be for someone to be subject to migraines?
Well, in people who are migraineurs, so to speak, or have migraine headaches, there are a lot of reasons that they can have an increase in frequency of their headaches, such as increased stress, if they're losing large amounts of sleep, or if they're exposed to certain environmental triggers, they can increase their headache frequency, so to speak. The other kind of headache that people typically will have are called tension headaches, and these are the headaches that tends to be associated with folks who have headaches at the end of the day, mm-hmm. a long, stressful day. They tend to be more focused on both sides of the head, and typically will have more of a squeezing or a vice-like feeling to them.
In my little bit of reading that I've done, women evidently are more subject to migraines than men. Why is that? Is there some specific reason that we know of, or just works out that way?
Typically, if you look at most population studies, women have about three times a higher incidence than men for headaches. It's probably both genetic factors that are associated with aspects of heredity that are specific to women, and the hormones, the female hormones, play a significant role in migraines. Typically, women of childbearing age from the ages of 16 or 17 through the ages of 40 to 45, that's when the incidence of migraine tends to peak. And so mm-hmm. the fluctuating levels of hormones that are associated with women in their childbearing years has a significant influence on migraines. Exactly how the female hormones, estrogen and progesterone principally, have the effects on the heredity of migraines and the neurophysiology with the cause of migraines is not exactly worked out at this point.
Do children get them?
Childhood migraine is a condition that we see. Pediatric neurologists take care of those, and those tend to be in children who have a family history of migraines as well.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening. The number 800-552-8502. You can call in with your question or comment. Again, the number 800-552-8502. My guest is Dr. Randall Brewer from River City's Interventional Pain Specialist and a specialist in migraine headaches. So if this is a condition that you have had, and I know many of you do, I know many people myself that suffer through migraines. I guess I'm fortunate that I've been spared that, at least up till now. Although I guess it can happen at any time, from what I understand. Some people get them in occasionally in life, and then other people seem to get them all the time.
Yeah, you know, that's something that's it's quite variable from person to person. There are some individuals who have migraine headaches that have maybe one or two bad headaches a year. Some people can go years in between serious migraine episodes. And then there are other people who are a little bit less fortunate and can have migraines more than once a week, several times per month, and it can lead to a lot of stress. It can cause a lot of stress in your regular daily activities that can trigger even more migraines, and you can get into a cycle where the headaches become very, very frequent. And that can, you know, lead to a lot of problems with taking care of your family, going to work, missing work, having to see doctors more often, things along those lines. Most people with migraines tend to have their headaches fairly well controlled, but the population that doesn't have that well of control tends to have to use, you know, quite a bit more medications and see doctors more often.
We do have a question that came in online, and that is, what is the difference between a migraine and a cluster headache?
That's a great question. A migraine headache typically has an associated buildup pattern, and so there's a sort of a low-grade headache, and it builds gradually over time. And it tends to get better if you lay down, especially if you lay down in a dark, quiet room and you're kind of motionless, or if you're still. Folks with cluster headaches tend to have headaches that can be worse at night. And people with cluster headaches, they want to get up and move around. They tend to be more common in men than women. And the reason they're called cluster is because they may happen every night for a certain period of time, 5 or 6 days or a couple of weeks, and then they're gone for a significant amount of time. Migraines tend to happen much less frequent than that, or more sporadically.
Recently, migraines were in the news, primarily around the Grammys, because Serene Branson, one of the reporters on the Grammys, appeared to have, everyone thought she had had a stroke while she was reporting on the Grammys, and her words started coming out as gibberish. But she says now that she was diagnosed as having had a migraine with an aura episode, which sounds severe. But what are the symptoms of a migraine aura? And obviously, they sometimes must get that severe. How does that work? What exactly was she talking about?
You know, that's a really interesting question. In terms of what an aura is, it's a neurologic symptom that is associated with a migraine. And basically, the theory is that there are nerve cells or brain cells that trigger the migraine headache, and the pain pathways are activated. And then you have a phenomenon known as vasoconstriction. The vasoconstriction is something that occurs in certain areas of the brain. It can cause problems with excitability and depression of certain brain functions. And so what happens in migraine with aura, folks will have maybe some numbness and tingling. Most commonly, they'll have flickering lights or bright lights in their vision. They may actually lose vision for a small amount of time. In a very small subset of patients who have auras or migraines with auras will have more stroke-like symptoms where they're having difficulty with speech or difficulty with movement or difficulty with their coordination. Even more rare than that are migraine-associated strokes, which are basically areas of the brain that are permanently damaged by that vasoconstriction.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening. Dr. Randall Brewer in the studio with me, and we're talking about migraine headaches this evening. If you'd like to ask a question, give us a call at 800-552-8502. Again, the number is 800-552-8502. Your questions and any comments you might make are also welcomed this evening. If someone is subject to migraines, are there any symptoms that appear before they get struck with the headache? Is there anything that people should watch for if they've never experienced it? Any like pre-event symptoms?
Yeah, the most common event that most people will report with a migraine is that they have difficulty with maybe not feeling well that day. It's called the migraine prodrome, so to speak. They may get up in the morning and maybe have a little bit of nausea or maybe a dull headache, and the symptoms gradually build over time. Some people that will develop into a full-blown migraine, so to speak, and other individuals, that may be all they feel for that period of time. Occasionally, the subset of patients who have migraine with aura will have the symptoms of the flickering lights or changes in their vision before they actually develop the headache.
Okay. There's another question coming in online. I've got to kind of turn to read it here. What test do you do to determine if there are migraines cluster or other sources? So basically, how do you diagnose a migraine headache?
The diagnosis of migraine is purely based upon the history that one gives the physician in terms of how their headache feels to them, how often they get the headache, and how the headache responds to changes in your activity or the medications that you've taken. So if you do a CT scan or commuted computer tomography scan or a magnetic resonance imaging scan, MRI scan of the brain, you're not going to see a migraine headache on a scan. Or looking at electrical activity in the brain is not a, a diagnostic tool for diagnosing migraine. The physician basically does a history, which is listens to what your headache symptoms are, and a physical examination to make sure that there aren't other reasons for you to have a headache.
Gotcha. Our number this evening, if you'd like to call with a question, 800-552-8502 on this special Monday edition of Health Matters. Trying it out here on a Monday, and we're talking about migraine headaches and pain. And Dr. Randall Brewer from River City's Interventional Pain Specialist is my guest today. I guess the next question is, if someone has a migraine, how do you treat them?
Yeah, there are a number of treatments that are available for migraines depending upon what we're trying to do with treatment. There is acute migraine treatment that's often called abortive therapy or acute therapy. Basically, when you feel the headache coming on, you can take a medication to relieve the headache precisely at that time. The other type of therapy that we use in migraine headaches are called preventive therapies or prophylactic therapy. Those therapies are medications that are given every day, whether or not you have a headache, and they are designed to prevent the headache from happening.
How successful are they?
Most migraine preventive medications are successful in reducing the attacks of migraine by at least 50% or so. So if you look at patients who have headaches more than, let's say, 5 or 10 days per month, typically, if they're on a drug for preventive therapy, they'll have 5 or less headaches per month, depending on what their headache frequency was before they started the medications.
Are there other things that you look at, relative health and diet, that influence headaches?
That's an individual thing as well. There are classic dietary issues that tend to be a factor in migraines. Some types of cheeses, some types of wines can trigger migraines in certain individuals. Certain types of ethnic foods, such as Chinese food or other Asian spices, can trigger migraines in susceptible individuals. So most people with migraines, they'll come to know what they can and cannot eat when it comes to triggering their headaches.
Okay. And we do have our first caller for the evening, a caller from Shreveport. This is Renee. Why don't you go ahead with your question this evening?
Dr. Brewer, I was wanting to find out what actually causes the severe pain of the migraine.
Yeah, the severe pain is most likely related to the nerves that are in the lining of the brain. It's called the dura mater. The brain itself doesn't feel pain. And so what happens is the nerves are activated by whatever the trigger happens to be in the nerve cells in the brain. And those neurons basically cause changes in the dura mater with the changing blood vessel calibers, or the amount of blood flow that's going to that part of the lining of the brain. And those nerves are more excitable during the headache. So it's the lining of the brain that's actually hurting during the migraine attack.
We have another online question. This one is, can migraines be a prelude to more severe problems such as a broken blood vessel, that type of thing, some other injury to the head?
Migraines are common, very, very common. I think it's estimated that 18% of women and maybe 6% of men have migraines. Breaking blood vessels in the brain, such as aneurysms and arteriovenous malformations, are very uncommon, and they're rare. So you're going to hear about individuals who actually have migraine headaches, but they also had an aneurysm or an arteriovenous malformation. The migraine very likely did not have anything to do with the development of a blood vessel problem that caused bleeding into the brain. If you develop a headache that is the worst headache of your life, if it's very severe, very quickly, if you develop a change in your coordination, a rapid change in your vision or the ability to speak, that's the type of headache that you want to get immediately treated for and see your doctor right away or go to the emergency room. Those are the symptoms that we classically call red flags, and those are the symptoms that could be due to a ruptured blood vessel or some other more serious problem in the brain.
That was going to be my next question, and maybe it's just good to reiterate it. When do you decide that if you have a headache? I mean, we all get headaches, and sometimes some feel bad. But when do you decide that this is a point that it's something more serious or very serious, and you need to get to the emergency room?
The most important thing for you to consider is the tempo of how severe the headache is over a short period of time. And so if the headache is getting worse very, very quickly, and you start to have difficulty with your speech, difficulty staying awake, or significant changes in feelings in your hands or feet, slurring of your speech, things along those lines that are called neurologic symptoms, those are signs that you need to get medical help right away.
All right, here's another online. We're getting lots of online questions tonight, but you can call us and get come on and speak to us if you'd like at 800-552-8502. Again, 800-552-8502. Is there any correlation from the initial manifestation of a brain tumor with migraine headaches?
That's another question that tends to come up whenever folks have a concurrent diagnosis of migraine headaches, and brain tumors do occur in the general population at a very, very low frequency. In most individuals who have a brain tumor, their symptom is not a headache on presentation. There are patients who will have migraines, and they also may have a brain tumor, but the chances of a link between those two conditions is very, very small.
Okay.
Or non-existent.
You had mentioned earlier you were talking about headaches brought on by stress or migraines brought on by stress, and pretty much in modern day lifestyles, stress is just something that we deal with quite a lot. Are there any specific ways that you teach or encourage patients to be able to deal with that or to relieve some of the stress?
That's a great question. I think most of the patients that I talk to about their migraine headaches, they find ways around stress. And when they know that their stress is going to be predictable, let's say around the holidays or certain times around the school year, they will know to have some extra migraine medications around perhaps. The biggest thing with stress and migraines that I've come to understand is that whenever there's a problem with sleep, especially lack of good sleep, brought on by stress, it can trigger migraines that are very difficult to handle. The other thing that I think is useful is to have a regular exercise program that will help you to relieve your stress and find other outlets of stress that are going to enhance your general health as well.
Okay. We have another caller waiting. This is Susan from Shreveport. Had a look over there at the monitor. Susan, go ahead with your question this evening. Thanks for calling Health Matters.
Okay, thank you. Doctor, you mentioned that environmental issues could come into play with migraines, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling. Some individuals will have their migraines triggered by certain smells, and we don't know exactly which smells can or can't trigger migraine in certain individuals. I've taken care of patients who are sensitive to cigarette smoke, for example. Some folks are sensitive to maybe cigar smoke or pipe smoke, fumes from paints, things along those lines can trigger migraines in certain individuals. And most people, they learn what they can and cannot be around in terms of those environmental types of triggers.
All right, Susan, thank you very much for calling tonight. You can call with your question at 800-552-8502. This is our Health Matters this evening. Dr. Randall Brewer is my guest. We're talking about migraine headaches primarily and headaches, which are generally a pain for a lot of us. You mentioned smell as being a possible. Are these the things that are commonly referred to with migraines as triggers? Because we hear that a lot, migraines and triggers. What are those specifically?
It can vary depending on the person. The triggers that are most commonly associated with migraines are dietary triggers, such as certain foods, Chinese food, Asian foods, foods with high spice content. Some folks have triggering from certain cured meats, certain yeasts. The additive MSG can trigger migraines in some individuals. It can be in Asian foods as well. Other triggers tend to be more along the lines of smells and other environmental triggers that can trigger migraines in certain individuals. Most people learn what they can and cannot eat in terms of, you know, certain types of wines and cheeses and other foods. So I don't hear that a lot these days because a lot of the food is prepared without MSG. And like I said, most people learn what they, you know, can and can't eat when it comes to triggers.
All right. A lot of calls coming in right now. If you'll be patient and we'll get to you one at a time. We'll definitely do that. We have Jeff now from Shreveport who's been waiting. Thanks for waiting for us. We'll go ahead with your question tonight.
Yeah, my girlfriend has severe migraines, and a lot of times there's pressure and pain behind her right eye. Is that something to be concerned about more than just migraines?
The symptom of pain behind the eye is very, very common with migraine. If she's had a thorough evaluation by her physician, and many folks with migraines will have had some sort of imaging exam like a CT scan or an MRI to make sure there's not a structural lesion. As long as that's been done, there's a history of migraine attacks that are periodic and have been present for a number of years, chances are everything's okay. But I would encourage her to, you know, make sure that the bases are covered with her physician in terms of getting other causes excluded.
All right. Thank you for your question. More calls coming in. Our number is 800-552-8502 if you'd like to get on to Health Matters this evening with your question. We do have another caller online, and we're just going to go ahead. I don't have your name yet, but caller, go ahead with your question this evening. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Angie. I'm from Lufkin. And I just wanted to mention that, you know, I have had migraines all my life, and when I was expecting my children, and my daughter, my first pregnancy, I could no longer take Imitrex and take different types of medication for that. But my doctor in Austin, Texas, referred me to a person who did biofeedback. What are your thoughts about that? It was successful for me, and, of course, you know, much better than taking harmful medication. And of course, that was a little bit, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but still it worked. Of course, now I take medication for it when it happens.
Biofeedback has been around for a number of years and can be very effective for headache treatments. As you mentioned, it can be something that is an option for folks who can't take drugs during a certain period of time. It takes dedication and free time or dedicated time. Many people who have the ability to learn biofeedback can become medication free if they have the time to dedicate to that, as well as learn it and stick with it. But it is a very valuable source of non-pharmacologic treatment.
All right, Angie, thanks so much for your call on Health Matters this evening. Our number, 800-552-8502, Dr. Randall Brewer from River City's Interventional Pain Specialist as part of the Willis-Knighton Health System, in the studio with me. And we have our next caller, and this is Michael from Blanchard. Michael, thanks for waiting, and go ahead with your question.
Sure. I had, you know, headaches, migraine headaches diagnosed about 3 years ago. They're real heavy for, you know, 3-4 a month. I got on Topamax and some other medications for it, started developing kidney stones. So they took me off the Topamax, and they started coming back. But all of a sudden, about December, they just, you know, they stopped coming so frequently. I haven't had a migraine since December, although I do have some other things, like people will talk to me and say, hey, you know, I've been asking you something 3 or 4 times. Is there any reason the headaches just stop all of a sudden like that, or is that something to be concerned about, or should I just count my blessings? I haven't had a headache.
That's a great question. I would encourage you to continue to see your physician and have your routine physical exams, you know, performed. I think it's pretty common for folks who have migraines to have years or months where they're relatively headache-free, and then the headaches may come back for a period of weeks or months at a time. We don't know exactly why that happens, but it is a fairly common occurrence. So I would, as you say, count your blessings for now. It sounds like things are going well for you.
All right, our number 800-552-8502 for this evening's Health Matters. Well, getting close to about halfway point through the show. We still have plenty of time to take your calls at 800-552-8502. Our next caller is Tom. Tom, thank you for holding this evening. What's your question?
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Brewer. I was diagnosed with bipolar, and I've been taking Depakote, and I've been a long sufferer of migraines starting from junior high. And since I've been on the Depakote regimen, my migraines and all headaches have gone away. Would that be a cause for the loss of the migraines, the Depakote itself?
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for your question. That's exactly why your migraines have gone away. Depakote is a drug that we now use along with the other anticonvulsant that the previous caller mentioned, Topamax. They're both seizure medications, and they affect the excitability or the irritability of nerve cells in the brain. And reducing the excitability of these nerve cells is probably what prevents the migraines. And Depakote is one of the drugs that we use for migraine prevention. So you've killed two birds with one stone there. Good for you.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening. Do we actually know what the cause is of migraines? I mean, the physical cause, or do we understand enough about it?
We do understand a lot about migraines, probably more understanding about migraines than many other neurological conditions in terms of the neural pathways that are involved. There's a system in the brain called the trigeminal vascular system, and basically the nerve cells at the base of the brain that regulate blood flow regionally within the brain as well as in the lining of the brain. They're called the meninges. This pattern of nerve cells can become abnormally excitable, and that triggers the migraine attack. And there are a number of studies that have documented changes in the way those nerve cells fire during migraine attacks.
All right. We have a lot of callers that are waiting on their phones and online, and appreciate your patience as you're on hold here. We'll try to get to all of your calls this evening. Next up is Beverly from Shreveport. Thanks for holding, Beverly. What's your question?
Actually, I have two.
Okay.
And I'll just, after I ask them, I'll just hang up and listen.
All right.
The first question is there a genetic component to migraines? And if so, does it seem to run in some families and not in others? That's my first question. My second question is, what is the most perpetuated false myth about migraines and migraine treatment?
Thanks, Beverly, for your question. Is there a genetic basis for migraine? Yes, we don't know why some families will have more members than others as a genetic basis. Chances are that there's a gene that's responsible for migraines that is passed from generation to generation, and it may be a dose-related phenomenon such that if you get a high dose of the gene, you're more likely to get the symptoms of migraine than other family members who don't get quite as high of a dose. Your other question about the most perpetuated myth about migraines, I would say, is that they're not very common. I think what we tend to hear about are the folks who have really severe migraines that have to miss work often. But as it turns out, migraines are woefully underdiagnosed. And as we talked about earlier, about 18% of women, around 6% of men, do have migraines. And I think what happens is a number of folks they'll just treat their headaches with over-the-counter medications, and there are a lot of them out there. There are a lot of options, and they'll basically deal with their headaches on their own. And I think a number of physicians, when they hear about that pattern of medication requirements, will make the diagnosis of migraines. But I think the myth is that migraine has to be severe. It has to be incapacitating for it to be there. But actually, most headaches probably are some variant of migraine if they're occurring fairly regularly.
Hmm. We do have another caller waiting right now. This is Monique from Monroe. Thank you for holding for us. What's your question this evening?
My question is that I am now 72 years old, and I started having migraines when I was 13. They eventually stopped, and I had the Aura you know, for about 20 minutes, and I knew that I had a migraine coming on, and I would take medication, and usually it didn't help. But my question is it possible to have the auras now without the headache?
That's a great question, and in older folks especially, it's called acephalgic migraine, which basically means a headache without a headache. And the phenomenon in the elderly population is well recognized, and there are a number of medications out there that are successful in reducing the numbers of attacks of these auras. The most effective medication, in my experience, has been a drug called Elavil or amitriptyline. It's a tricyclic antidepressant medication that, under the guidance of a well-trained physician, can be very effective in reducing these attacks. That's a very good question. Thank you for calling.
The number to call, by the way, is 800-552-8502, toll-free number, 800-552-8502. Join us tonight on Health Matters here, my guest, Dr. Randall Brewer, and we're talking primarily about migraine headaches. We do have another caller who is holding. This looks like Jenny from Winfield. Jenny, thanks for calling this evening. What's your question?
Dr. Brewer, I wondered if you could speak about hormones with women and migraines. I was diagnosed with migraines that were caused from hormonal issues, and since I've had a hysterectomy, I knew there was a chance they could get better or worse, and mine got worse, unfortunately. So I was wondering if you could speak to that topic a little bit.
Yeah, thanks, Jenny, for your question, and thanks for calling in. Hormones are very commonly associated with migraine attacks, and the changing hormone levels tend to be more of a factor than actually what the hormone levels are. And I see a number of patients who have migraines around certain times of the month, and then patients will have changes in hormone levels associated with pregnancy and menopause. Usually things stable out once the hormone levels become at into a situation where there's a new baseline. There are a number of medications out there that are available to help to stabilize the hormones under the direction of a women's health care provider, such as a gynecologist. But for the most part, it's the changing hormone levels that can trigger the migraines. And some folks are able to adjust the medications that they use according to when the hormone levels are going to change predictably.
You know, it's interesting because you're talking about changes in hormones, and earlier we're talking about changes in, you know, diet, like Asian food, certain things, MSG, that type of thing. So it just sounds like whenever there's some sort of a change in the body systems, that tends to cause that type of a reaction.
Yeah, I think what happens is the homeostasis of those nerve cells tends to be somewhat fragile when it comes to different biological products. Obviously, they're under the influence of hormones, and they're under the influence of compounds known as amines. And these are chemical compounds that can affect different neurotransmitters or chemicals within those nerve cells in the brain. And when the levels destabilize or change abruptly, it can cause irritability in that system.
All right, the number again, 800-552-8502. If you have some lines open, so now is a great time to call with your question. My guest is Dr. Randall Brewer. He's from River City's Interventional Pain Specialists. We're talking about migraine headaches this evening. You can call us at 800-552-8502 with your question or comment. We have a caller now from Natchitoches. This is Joe. Joe, thanks for holding on. What's your question?
I used to have real bad migraines, and when they got at their worst, blood would come out of my nose. Is that normal?
Thanks for calling, Joe. Most patients who have migraine headaches will not have a nosebleed associated with their headache. Nosebleeds, recurrent nosebleeds, are fairly common, and migraines are very common as well. It's not something that's well recognized, and typically what I would say is that ear, nose, and throat doctor would probably be the best person to consult about that to make sure that there's no abnormal blood vessel around the sinuses, the nasal cavity. We do know that blood vessel calibers and blood vessel changes do occur during the migraine attacks, but most people, the large majority of people who have migraines, will not have a nosebleed with it. So that would sort of require a separate evaluation to make sure that there's nothing else going on there.
A question about that. Is it the migraine that causes those blood pressure changes, or is it the blood pressure changes that are causing the migraine, or both?
Most people who are having a migraine attack will not have much change in their blood pressure. Now, uncontrolled hypertension or uncontrolled high blood pressure can be associated with a headache, and that's a different headache. It's not a migraine headache. Occasionally, you'll have folks who have both hypertension and migraine headaches, and it can be difficult, more difficult to control your blood pressure if you are having frequent attacks of migraines or any other chronic pain condition for that matter. But in general, the two are unrelated.
All right. The questions that you might have are welcome here on Health Matters. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. The number is 800-552-8502. And we have Jesse on the phone right now. Jesse, go ahead with your question this evening.
Yes. I'd like to know, I have these severe headaches, and I don't know, sometimes I've been diagnosed with migraines, but it's because of an injury I had in a helicopter crash in Vietnam. And I'd like to know, does injuries, head injuries, can they cause you to eventually have migraines?
Jesse, that's a great question. It's a condition called post-traumatic headache or post-traumatic migraines. A number of people who have had significant brain injuries or skull fractures, for example, or other closed head injuries can develop a chronic headache condition. Occasionally, this condition will look exactly like migraine, and I think there is a proportion of these patients who have had migraines triggered or migraine headaches develop as a result of their head trauma. In general, those migraines are treated basically the same as headaches that are not associated with trauma. Importantly, you want to go ahead and have a physician look at you. Make sure that there's nothing else that's going on. Sometimes the fluid around the brain can leak after head injuries, and that can cause problems with headaches. And so a thorough evaluation should be done before the diagnosis of migraine is made, and then it's typically treated like other migraine headaches are.
All right, the number to call, 800-552-8502. We have just about 20 minutes or so left in the program this evening, so if you want to get your question in, be sure to give us a call, 800-552-8502. Next call is from Camden. Looks like it's Camden, Arkansas. This is Shelley calling. Shelley, go ahead with your question.
I've been having migraines since I was 14, and I'm 40 now, and I know a number of my triggers since I've been having them so long, but one really big one, especially since, you know, now that I'm getting older, is weather. Is that normal? When it rains, I know it. And it's getting worse as I get older.
Are you saying that rain triggers your migraines?
Yes, and that probably sounds crazy, but it's like I've got a weather. Is that normal?
I hear that quite a bit. It's not something that you read about a lot in classic neurology textbooks and articles about headaches. A number of people will be sensitive to barometric pressure changes, and when storm fronts are moving through, for example, they will have changes in their inner ear pressure and things along those lines that can trigger migraines. Unfortunately, the weather's not something we can always predict, and we certainly can't control it. And so what I typically tell these folks is to, you know, do their best to have extra headache medications around if they know that the weather's going to be particularly bad, and just do the best you can. But I think the point that you bring out is something that we see a lot, is that over time, over the course of a lifetime, in individuals who have migraines, their triggers may vary. And so in certain stages of life, some environmental factors may be more triggering than others, and that's something that we see fairly commonly as well.
The number to call to be on tonight's Health Matters with Dr. Randall Brewer is 800-552-8502 if you have a question related to your headaches. Again, the number 800-552-8502. As I mentioned, just about 20 minutes left in the program so we can get your calls in. We do have a caller that didn't want to go on the air, but they left their question nevertheless, and you're welcome to do that, by the way. If you're shy, you don't have to go on the air, but we'd love to feature you if you'd like. This question is, I had severe sinus problems as a teenager that also caused migraines. An operation on my sinuses relieved this. And I guess this is related to your question about migraines being not diagnosed frequently enough. This question is, are many migraines really just a manifestation of sinus pressure issues?
Again, I think changes in barometric pressure, changes in the endonasal sinuses and things along those lines are very, very common. And sinusitis is fairly common. Obviously, colds are extremely common. Migraines are also common. And so we're dealing with conditions that frequently overlap. I think there are people who have regular migraines that are triggered by colds and other changes in their sinuses. But in general, when their sinuses are repaired or the cold goes away, they're still going to be predisposed to having migraines that are not related to the weather or changes in their sinuses later on in life.
More calls coming in. Remember, you might have to wait a little while to get on here, but we appreciate your patience for waiting on hold. The number again, 800-552-8502. And if I'm reading this right, this is Dorita from Alexandria. Thank you so much for holding. What's your question this evening?
Yes, my question is, can you get bad migraine headaches after you've had a case of diabetic ketoacidosis?
Yes, that's definitely possible to have migraines and diabetes. Diabetes is fairly common in our population, and migraines are as well. Some folks who have changes in their blood sugar levels that are fairly significant from going very high to very low can trigger migraines in certain individuals. And I think it's something that you want to pay close attention to. Making sure that the blood sugar levels are closely monitored. And in a number of individuals who had that problem, their migraine headaches will be better controlled as well.
Do diabetics have a greater chance of getting migraines, or is there no correlation?
As far as we know, there's no correlation between the most common form of diabetes, which is called adult onset diabetes or diabetes type 2, and migraines. They're both very common conditions.
All right, here's another question from, this one's also from Alexandria, and they didn't want to go on the air. They want to know, can sipping alcohol relieve the onset of a migraine?
Sipping alcohol relieving the onset of a migraine, that's not something that I've heard as a migraine relieving tool. I think what you hear more commonly are certain alcohols, especially wines, that can be associated with triggering migraines.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, there's been no research that's looked at actually using alcohol for a migraine treatment.
I've heard that also related to certain wines that do that. What is it that in the wine particularly that does that?
There are compounds known as thiamines. That can overlap with some of the neurotransmitters in the brain and cause sort of a disruption in the normal stable levels of those transmitters in the brain and cause those nerve cells that are excitable in patients who have migraines to go into that state of causing the migraine.
All right, the number to call this evening, you can be on Health Matters. We have just about 15 minutes or so left in the program, 800-552-8502, if you want to call with your question this evening. My guest is Dr. Randall Brewer from River City's Interventional Pain Specialists here in Shreveport. And I know we've got more calls coming in. We want to be able to get to yours. And just about 14 minutes left to do that, so give us a call, 800-552-8502. Anyone? We think of headaches, we usually think of going and running for, I don't know, aspirin or something like that to get rid of that headaches. Are there any particular things that you advise if someone feels the onset of a particularly severe headache, what they should do that might help relieve the situation or control it in some way.
Yeah, if you know for sure it's a migraine and it's not one of the serious headache disorders associated with a neurologic symptom such as difficulty with your speech, difficulty with coordination, level of consciousness, and things along those lines. If it's a headache that that is not a real severe headache or a headache that's the worst headache of your life, and you feel as though it is a migraine, there are a number of therapies that are called acute therapies or abortive therapies. The most common therapies that are used are usually over-the-counter medications, and these medications have acetaminophen or Tylenol in them, and they also commonly have caffeine in them. And those are pretty commonly used in the general population. Those are non-specific treatments. Now, other acute therapies are called specific treatments for migraines, and the biggest category of those treatments are called the triptans, and these are drugs that mimic the neurotransmitter serotonin, and those are called migraine-specific treatments, and that means they only work if you're having a migraine headache, and those tend to be the more successful treatments for the acute headaches.
All right. Dorita is back with us. She called earlier with a question. She has a follow-up question. If you have your question to ask this evening, give us a call at 800-552-8502. But Dorita, welcome back. Well, what's your question?
Yes, I would like to know, can you also get sinusitis? Will that make you have migraines on the brain after you've had a form of diabetic ketoacidosis?
Absolutely. Any sort of medical illness, whenever you're being treated for an infection or poorly controlled diabetes or poorly controlled high blood pressure, disruptions in the normal stable state of the body can cause migraines to sort of get worse or become more frequent. And many people will experience that once the infection is cleared or the blood sugar or the blood pressure are controlled, that the headaches do improve. That doesn't mean that they're not going to come back. They could come back, but once the medical conditions are stabilized, typically the headaches will at least improve to back to their normal baseline level.
What are some of the newest treatments? In other words, what's on the horizon that we're looking at for treatment of headaches?
Well, the biggest breakthrough in the treatment of migraines in the past 20 years was the development of the triptans, which are the acute therapy drugs. The forerunner of those drugs was a drug called Imitrex, and now there are a number of other triptans that have followed sumatriptan or the drug Imitrex for the treatment of acute migraines. And those have been widely utilized, and they can be very effective. In terms of preventive medications, the most common medications that were used in the past were very old drugs, and they were typically not real well tolerated. Those were the tricyclic antidepressants and the drugs called beta blockers, which are older drugs that were used for high blood pressure. The newer drugs, Topamax or topiramate, is a very commonly utilized drug for migraine prevention. It can be quite effective. And the newest drug that has been just very recently approved by the Food and Drug Administration is a drug called Botox or botulinum toxin, which is a protocol where people who have chronic migraine chronic migraine disorder associated with headaches more days of the month than not have injections of Botox in the muscles around the skull and have a reduction in the frequency of their headaches with that. So there are a number of newer drugs out there that can be very, very effective in preventing headaches, and that's probably the biggest breakthrough, I would say, in the past 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
For the treatment of migraines.
A question related to those medications. This is a caller who didn't want to go on the air, and that's fine also if you would like to call us and have us read your question. That's all right. If you'd like to go on the air, we still have a few minutes left. The number again is 800-552-8502. This person specifically wants to know, are there prescription medications now for migraines that can be taken for patients that also have heart issues or other health issues?
That's That's a good question. A number of the medications that are used for migraines affect blood vessels. And so in folks who have heart conditions, high blood pressure, and have undergone previous procedures for coronary artery disease or stroke can be at a significantly elevated risk of having a complication for drugs that that affect blood vessels. Most of the medications that are used that are specific for migraines also affect blood vessels, so they have to be used with extreme caution in folks who have had prior heart attacks and strokes. The medications that I'm most comfortable with in giving folks who have had prior heart attacks are the drugs that are predominantly based with acetaminophen, sometimes acetaminophen, caffeine-containing medications with a little bit of a drug called butalbital can be fairly effective. The trade name for that particular drug is called Fiorasset. Other medications can be given either intramuscularly or through through an intravenous line that can be very helpful in treating acute migraines, such as an infusion of magnesium or a shot of a low dose of drug called Toradol for the acute treatments. But we have to be very, very careful in folks who have had prior heart attacks and giving them the drugs that affect blood vessels.
Right. You mentioned earlier, and I think most of us have heard this, that sometimes caffeine will help stop a headache. Why does that work?
Caffeine is a medication that changes the caliber of blood vessels around the skull. And what happens is the blood vessels dilate, and the pulsatile quality of the headache is because those blood vessels have more blood in them around the around the skull. And so you feel what people describe as, you know, a pounding headache. And that's basically the heartbeat, the feeling of your heart around your brain. And so if you take a drug like caffeine that tends to constrict blood vessels, then it can help the component of the headache that is associated with the dilation of the blood vessels.
Okay. The number to call tonight if you have a question for tonight's Health Matters for Dr. Randall Brewer, as we're discussing migraine headaches this evening, is 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. About 7 minutes or so to get your question in. So if you've been thinking you might want to call, well, don't miss your chance. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. We had another caller that called in and wanted to remain anonymous and off the air, and this is our migraines sometimes caused by or attributed to obesity.
As far as we know, there are no links between obesity and migraines. There are studies who have looked at or a condition associated with obesity that is associated with a severe headache disorder, and that's called pseudotumor cerebri. And that's a condition that obese persons with chronic headaches do need to have looked into. The condition of pseudotumor cerebri is a condition in which there's abnormal resorption or abnormal management of the fluid around the brain. And what happens is there can be severe headaches, and it can lead to significant trouble with vision and even can lead to blindness. And that's something that neurologists and neurosurgeons deal with fairly commonly and can prescribe drugs and do procedures to reduce some of the fluid around the brain that can improve the symptoms in those individuals that have that condition.
All right. Another online question. Are migraine sufferers more susceptible to strokes?
Strokes are fairly common, and migraines are common as well. The most common form of stroke is due to atherosclerosis, which is the same cause of strokes that causes heart attacks and other of the more common vascular problems. Migraine-related strokes are very rare, and by a large majority, most of the people who have migraine headaches are not going to have a stroke as a result of their migraines. But as we've talked about, strokes are very common, especially as we get older, and a number of people who have migraines will go on to develop strokes later in their life, but they're not usually related to their migraine.
All right, our next caller, and we have three people holding, so these will probably be the last calls of the evening, but you can still call if you'd like, just in case, 800-552-8502. But from Longview, we have Nancy. Nancy, go ahead with your call.
My daughter has migraines and was successfully treating those migraines with Midrin, and she's recently been told that's off the market. What's going on with Midrin?
Yeah, that's an old medication that was taken off the market, and it had some links to some chronic health problems, and it was felt to be not a significant too much risk that outweighed the benefits. So now, what I'm advising my patients to do is to come in and let's discuss what other medication options are out there.
All right. You're listening to Health Matters here on Red River Radio. We still have a couple more calls, and we're going to get to them. I had one question, though, just in my research for this program, that there are actually surgical treatments for migraines. What are those, and are they just experimental, or what's the story there?
They are experimental for the most part. There are stimulators that are used, especially the stimulators that are associated with pain in the back of the head. That that area of the brain or the skull is called the occipital region, mm-hmm. and the occipital nerves can be irritated in patients who have migraines, and especially people who have problems with their neck, and they also have problems with migraines. And if a stimulator is implanted around the nerve in the back of the skull by a surgeon, then in a number of patients, those stimulators can help to control their migraines. And this is a very, very small proportion of folks who have migraine headaches, but they are useful in that small proportion of patients.
All right, we have another caller waiting right now. I don't have your name, but go ahead with your question this evening. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your question. Thanks for calling.
There was some news around September about scientists finding the migraine gene. I think it's TRESK. Dr. Samuel Ketter of the neurologist at the Medical Research Council Foundation. Are you aware of those studies, and do you think that could lead to the cure of migraines eventually?
I'm aware of the look for the search for the migraine gene. I think it's very exciting that the research has taken place. The translation of finding the gene and that leading to the curing of migraines is probably many, many years away, but the new information is very exciting.
So they've actually found what they think is the cause for migraines, or?
Well, it's difficult to assign a cause to a genetic abnormality, and what typically happens is they look for changes in the DNA in folks who have migraines compared to folks who don't, and from those changes in the DNA, they figure out what gene does that DNA represent, and what part right. of the chemistry of the brain is that gene very important in.
Gotcha.
And that gives us some clues as to what the cause of migraines may actually be.
All right, our last caller from the evening is going to be Peggy from Shreveport. Peggy, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Thank you. My 26-year-old daughter has had migraines since she was 4, very severe at a younger age, thankfully not as severe or not as often now. But I've often wondered, and I did not hear the beginning of the program, so this may have been addressed earlier. She fell from a grocery cart and hit her head severely against the shelf in the grocery and hurt it, no lesions. She did have a CT scan later. They saw a very, very small gray area. I've often wondered if an accident such as that could cause migraines.
Peggy, did anyone else in the family, if you don't mind me asking, have migraines? Is there a family history?
Not really.
Okay. Occasionally, migraines can follow head injuries or trauma. Head injuries are fairly common, and also migraines are. It's more common in folks who have actually had a skull fracture or some change in the lining of the brain as a result of the trauma. Usually, folks who have had a head injury will find that there is a family member or there's someone related to them who has had migraine headaches in the past. Headaches that follow head injuries that feel like migraines and otherwise respond to the same types of medications as migraines are treated by physicians and neurologists and other specialists the same as migraines that exist in folks who have not had prior head trauma.
All right. Well, Dr. Brewer, that'll have to be our last question for the evening. I want to thank you so much for being on Health Matters this evening.
You're welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
Remember, Health Matters is an informational program only. We suggest that you always consult with your physician about any medical condition you have concerns about. The producer of this program is Renee Moran. The engineer is Bill Beckett. We had the assistance of Wally Derleth. My guest was Dr. Randall Brewer from River City's Interventional Pain Specialists. I'm Kermit Poling. Thanks for joining us this evening. I hope you have a great night. This is member-supported Red River Radio, a public radio service of LSUS. You're listening to KDAQ, Shreveport, Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, and KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches.